Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Each year, some 500,000 babies are born premature in the United States, 15 million worldwide. St. Louis will soon become part of a research team on finding out why. But before we talk about that, we take a few minutes this Veterans Day to remember those who have served our country on land, sea, and air. Our focus today is on those who served in the air, specifically pilots and crews of the iconic B-17 Flying Fortress bomber that served our country so well during World War II. Film stars like Clark Gable and Jimmy Stewart were among them. Others were just plain folks like Colonel Basil Hackelman, the first pilot of the celebrated B-17-909. 909 never lost a crew member or aborted a mission over World War II Europe. Hackelman and 909 were in St. Louis this past summer. Amanda Huntingford spoke with Colonel Hackelman and with Jim Harley, a pilot for the Wings of Freedom Tour, which sponsored the St. Louis visit.
909 represents one of the most famous B-17s of the 8th Air Force that served out of England. It flew 140 combat missions without a crew loss or an abort, and very special airframe. The airplane survived the war. They flew it home, and it was scrapped at Kingman, Arizona. When this airplane was first restored, there were still a lot of people that were affiliated with the original 909. It means a lot to people to have it in this paint scheme. This particular B-17 was built in January 1945 in Long Beach by Douglas. It was under contract from Boeing to build B-17s. It didn't see combat. It went to the Air Sea Rescue Service in South America. And it served there until the middle to late 50s. And it was used for the atomic testing out in Yucca Flats. It saw three blasts, and it sat out there cooling off for about another 10 or 15 years. And then a company called Globe, they're a firefighting outfit, converted it to a tanker. And it served with them until the mid-80s when we got it and restored it back to World War II condition.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
My name's Basil Hackelman. I reside now in Springfield, Missouri. I was the first pilot on the original 231909. We got it in April of 1944. It was brand new, didn't have a scratch on it. Of course, the Germans fixed that right away, but I flew 30 missions altogether, 14 in 909.
Can you tell me about that first mission?
The first one was uneventful, and the second one the same, and the third one was one I'll always remember. We bombed Bremen, Germany, and there's a book out now titled A Higher Call. And the pilot was Charlie Brown. It was his first mission. It was my third. And he was all shot up, and a German pilot escorted him out to sea, which was highly illegal. If they'd have known about it, they would have hung the German pilot immediately. But he did escort the guys back out over the sea so the anti-aircraft fire wouldn't shoot at them coming across the coast. And he went back to Germany, and they come on back to England. But I was on that same mission that same day in the same target. So I'd always remember that one.
And I understand your mission on January 11th was also very eventful?
The January 11th, the fog was about 5 feet thick. You couldn't see the ground from the cockpit. They set up markers alongside the taxiway and the runway, and we took off. We got 166 bombers up when the bomber command decided it was too dangerous to fly. We didn't have any place to land in England, so we just went on and flew the mission. It was best to try to land with an empty airplane with one all full of gas and bombs. Over Germany, we were attacked by an estimated 500 German fighters. We lost 42 of our 166 bombers, which turned out to be 25%. But we were officially credited with shooting down 125 German fighters that day, which is a lot of airplanes, but in a five-hour battle, It's not impossible. Each airplane carried approximately 15,000 rounds of 50 caliber ammunition. We used up most of it.
What was that mission like for you with all of the fire coming at you and seeing your friends going down around you?
I was pretty busy flying formation, so I didn't see much of it. But it was really hard flying formation because you were flying closer than these two airplanes are together and sat there for hours doing that. The more fighters appeared up out there, the closer together you got because the safety in numbers then. But it was scary, sure. I was beyond being scared. Everybody was that day. You just facing that many airplanes and all of them shooting at you, you don't think you have much of a chance to survive in that kind of a day. But we were just kids, so, you know, we were asked to do a job, and that's what you do.
What would be running through your head when you were flying? What would you be thinking about?
Trying to survive. Really, that you did the job you were trained to do and to the best of your ability and put your little trust in the man upstairs, and so we came home.
What did it feel like when the plane would get hit?
Well, it depended on what it got hit with. Anti-aircraft fire, if it got that close, you felt a big bump and a heck of an explosion, even though it didn't tear up your airplane. Mm-hmm. Sure, holes in it. This skin's pretty. That's all of it right there. It doesn't take much for a shrapnel to go through that. There's jagged holes in it. So, you know, you knew, but if they're far enough away you didn't hear them, then they weren't dangerous.
I understand for one mission you lost a number of engines before you were able to land?
We lost two over Germany. Got back just as we crossed the coast on the way back to England, we lost a third one. We flew across, not many miles across the channel there in places. We flew across about 5 feet above the water and landed on the beach because we couldn't climb over the trees along the bank. After we landed right at the edge of the water, then we wondered, was this beach mined? Because the British mined all the beaches, we thought, in a way, because they expected the Germans to invade any day. We got hold of somebody on the radio. They came down with a minesweeper or a Geiger counter or whatever and located the mines for us and marked us out a path across the beach so we could get to land.
What did it take to land the plane with only one engine? What was that like?
Well, you don't land with power on. You pull the power off and it's just a big old glider that glides like a rock. When you pull the power off, you're on the ground, but you're going real slow.
I'm curious about what it would be like psychologically to be a pilot of a bomber plane. You're flying along, you're dropping bombs, you don't know who they're hitting, exactly what they're hitting. What was it like psychologically to fly the missions and to bomb the cities in Germany?
Well, actually, you didn't think about it. We're just kids. Mm-hmm. We didn't worry about it. I mean, you know, not when you got older, you worried about it. But the Army Air Corps in those days, they liked to have their pilots over 21 and under 25. Over 25, they were too careful. Under 21, they were too careless.
What was it like when you're heading back to see England or the White Cliffs of Dover and know that you were safe again?
Well, when you're coming back, when you got home, you just fell apart. We were really relaxed. Of course, maybe you'd only had 4 hours sleep the night before. Been in the air 10 hours, and 2 or 3 days in a row, you got pretty tired. So you just wanted to relax while catch up on your sleep.
You said you flew most of your missions in the 909, but you didn't fly all of them in that plane. How was the plane that you flew assigned?
The group tried to give each crew 48 hours off once a month. Otherwise, you're on duty 24/7. And if your airplane was flyable and you were gone, somebody else would fly it. Vice versa, if our airplane wasn't flyable, then we took one that was. So you didn't always have your own airplane. You didn't always fly your own airplane. It wasn't too badly damaged. They started work on it immediately when you got on the ground, and they still maybe patching holes when you got out the next morning to go. But we flew all day, and the ground crew worked on them all night.
It's a pilot's airplane, and it doesn't really have any bad vices. In today's world, there aren't a lot of people who can fly what we call a tailwheel airplane, the wheel in the back of the airplane. So it's a challenge to find pilots who can still fly these big, heavy airplanes that are tailwheel airplanes. But other than that, it trims up nice, it goes straight. It's a really neat airplane to fly for its time. It was designed 30 years after the Wright brothers flew, so it kind of puts it in perspective.
What does it take to keep the plane up?
A lot of money. All joking aside, it takes a lot of money. Parts are still out there. They're still pretty easy to find. Engine parts are still easy to find. But, you know, it burns 200 gallons an hour of fuel at $6 to $7 a gallon. Consumes about 2 or 3 gallons of oil per hour of engine oil. And insurance and all the other maintenance that's required. It's pretty costly. We figure between $3,000 and $4,000 per hour to operate.
My last flight, we had 2,000 bombers over Berlin. I've marveled and wondered a lot of times at the amount of gasoline that had to be come across on the pipeline. It's 2,800 gallons of gas apiece on 2,000 airplanes. And besides that, we furnished the gasoline for the British that fly all night. And all of our fighter flights, just marvel at this country, this build all those airplanes, make all that gasoline, and get over to us. We had the easy part. We used it, but somebody had a heck of a job getting it over there to us, especially had to run the German submarines that was trying to sink them. Nobody could do it by themselves. It took all of us, even the young ladies like you that crawled in there to drive all these rivets. And I have read that they were making one of these airplanes every hour because it wasn't uncommon for us to lose 60 or 70 a day. They made 12,700 in some of these. 7,000 of them were lost in combat.
Wow.
We are a living history group. And through flying these aircraft around the country, we bring the museum to the people. If you wanted to see a B-24 from St. Louis, Missouri, you would have to go to Dayton, Ohio. And that's a pretty long drive. By being able to fly these airplanes, we bring them to a couple cities around the St. Louis area, and people can take a short drive out to see them. They also have the opportunity to go flying in them, which is very unique. You can get in the airplane and go feel what it was like to be in the air in the airplane. And still have veterans that show up, like Basil. Our mission is to make sure their memory is not forgotten. And now we're seeing more families come out and enjoy the airplanes that had ties to the airplanes. And we just want to keep the history alive and make sure people don't forget World War II and the Greatest Generation. Over the years, since I've started anyway, the staple of the tour was the veterans. When I first started, they were coming out in droves. And, of course, they're getting up into their early to middle 90s now, and we're not seeing them as much. And what we are seeing are a lot of photo albums, kids, grandkids bringing the photo albums out, showing them, looking at the airplanes. And so there's been a shift in the people who come out and see the airplanes. But we also have the gamut of enthusiasts.
I have a picture that the bombardier took. He stuck his head and his camera up through that little bubble on the nose. That glass is removable. And I took a picture of the windshield of me in there. My helmet, my goggles, is faint in the background. But down here is a hole and up here is a hole. One bullet went over my shoulder. The other one went between my arm and my body. An inch either way, it would have got me, but no blood. That one scared you a little bit.
I would imagine so. Can we go back to the beginning? Can you tell me what made you decide to enlist?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't get a job at a modern-day thing. They did pay $21 a month and your room and board. So in the wintertime, I looked pretty good, an old farm boy.
What was it like when you got your orders to go over to England and fly?
Well, that's what we all look for, look forward to in training. Get over there, get job done.
And I understand you went over to England with a very special dollar bill. Can you tell me about that?
The 32 crews of us were going across. The first pilots all gathered up a dollar bill apiece, and we each signed each other's bills. And I still have that bill in my pocket. They're not a dollar bill, they're silver certificates. It's been many years since they made those, but these were made in 1935. But I've carried that 70-some years now.
I understand you got married the same day you got your wings. Can you tell me about that?
We got our wings and commissioned. My girlfriend then pinned my wings on, put my bars on my shoulders, and I put a ring on her finger that night, the 29th day of April, 1943. The 29th day of April, 44, I finished my 30th mission.
How long have you been coming up to see the plane with the tour?
About 5 years.
What was it like to see it again?
Well, that's a feeling I can't describe. This old airplane's just part of me. I feel it when I get in it. You know, I feel like a kid again. Actually, a feeling I can't describe, that's all.
Can you tell me any more about what it's like to fly in the 909 again?
There again, it's just something we did. I flew this airplane about 150 hours in combat. But it was all the time I flew it was in combat. After I got away from there, then it was fun to fly them. They're hard to fly, takes a lot of muscle power, but if you don't get in a hurry, it's easy to do. But it's still a thrill for me to get in the seat and even just sit up there and talk about it. It's fun. Somebody described it as a big old tired bird that just kept on flying. This old airplane made 140 missions. It never lost a crew member. And it never turned back for a mechanical failure, which is a record of everything. And I was 93 last spring, so I have a lot of stories.
One of World War II's most famous songs, and you've been listening to Colonel Basil Heckelman, the original pilot of the celebrated B-17-909, talking with our Amanda Huntingfort. When we come back, finding ways to help premature babies and their parents. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.